This episode of The Ready Room is brought to you by our friends at Squarespace, the easiest way to create beautiful blogs and websites and push content to your social networks.
You're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome to The Ready Room, show number 76, Smearing the Hot Chocolate. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me today is Greg Harbin. We'll be talking about some Star Trek news, including Greg's experience at the TNG Season 2 theatrical event, Jonathan Frakes and LeVar Burton on Attack of the Show, the decommissioning of the aircraft carrier Enterprise, and the official synopsis for Star Trek Into Darkness. Then in the feature, we're joined by Charlene Schmidt and Drew Stewart to discuss the TNG episode, Q Who. So let's step into the Ready Room. Hello, Greg. How are you this week?
Chris, I'm doing very well. Thank you. I had a very busy weekend, actually.
Yeah, actually, that's what I want to ask you about, Greg, because I'm very confused. I was watching the Twitters, and, you know, this was the biggest sports ball weekend of the whole year, I believe. And what are you doing going to some kind of damn holiday special or whatever that thing? What are you doing there when the sports ball's on TV?
I know. I completely spaced that the Damn It Liz holiday special was the same night as the sports ball. Of course, if I could have been watching them, you know, taking the sports ball over into the goal zone with their feet somehow, I definitely would have been paying much closer attention to that and not watching people like the amazing Molly Lewis or the Double Clicks or them there. I don't know. I really don't know what I was thinking.
Neither do I. I have no idea.
Although I do want to ask Chris, when you're watching sports ball, are there girls in corsets? I'm just saying there were girls in corsets at the holiday special.
I think it depends on which team is playing, but yeah, I think it does happen, especially with some of the NFL cheerleader squads.
Ah, okay. All right. Well, yeah. Maybe you're bringing me around on the sports ball a little bit.
Well, it was a good sports ball weekend for me because my Crimson Tide won the SEC championship, and we are going once again to play for the national championship coming up at the start of January. So I'm very excited.
That's an elephant. An elephant call.
Exactly. Can you do the tide rolling in?
It's like a wave. Sounds, it's like a wave coming up softly.
I don't think that's going to frighten any opponents right there.
Probably really not. That's so. Why they have the elephant, right? That loud elephant call. It's like the elephant from the Lord of the Rings.
That's right. But this Damn It holiday event was not the only thing you did this weekend. You got to go, I'm jealous, you got to go to the TNG Season 2 theatrical event.
Yes, indeed, I did. I got to see Q Who, which we're going to talk about later on the show, as well as the extended Measure of a Man, which everyone in the theater was sitting there transfixed during the entire episode. Gasping or crying. It was just amazing. I remember season one was kind of fun. Like, we were kind of making fun of the episodes a little bit. You know, they weren't even the greatest episodes in season one, much less of the whole series. And it was just, you know, let's laugh at Will Wheaton, you know, showing how big the stick needs to be. But Measure of a Man is such a good episode, and it holds up so well on screen. And on top of that, there was 12 minutes of never-before-seen footage. And it was just, it made the whole thing worth it. I really wasn't even expecting that much going into it.
So this is a case where the extended version really enhances the story in the episode, rather than it being stuff where you feel like, okay, yeah, I get why this was originally cut out.
Yeah, the extended version really enhanced the entire experience. I was really impressed by how much it was able to really just improve every scene. You know, there's just extra bits here and there that helped flesh it out. Obviously, once the Blu-ray comes out, we'll do a full, you know, spoiler review of it once everyone's had a chance to watch the episode. You know, it's not like it changes the ending. It's not like it's an alternate ending where Data gets sure. taken away. But but there is a lot in there that I don't think you could even find on, like, Memory Alpha. Because this comes from a tape that Mike Okuda snuck away to the screenwriter, Melinda Snodgrass. And it's been in her pantry or her closet for the last 25 years. So no one's seen this. So it's once people have been able to see it, we'll have a whole discussion. But the night itself was just absolutely spellbinding.
Right. Now, I suspect that by Wednesday, it will be all on Memory Alpha, however.
I haven't checked. I haven't checked yet. I would actually expect that most of the information is up there. The Memory Alpha elves were probably there scribbling down notes as they went.
Oh, well, that's true, yeah. I'm viewing it from my position in Japan. So the Blu-rays will be released on Tuesday, same mm-hmm. day that this show will come out, and mine are ordered from the States. They will ship, so hopefully I'll have them by maybe Thursday, and I'll finally be able to see this for myself, including the alternate ending where it turns out that they take Pulaski back to Starbase and they disassemble her to the great cheers of many a Star Trek fan.
This is quite true. And you know, I didn't talk about Q Who. It was really interesting to see, you know, on top of the enhanced effects, I forgot that moment where they beam over to the Borg ship and they have to actually fight with an Andorian there.
I'll take your blood to Andorra.
And there's that crazy fight and they have to throw him over the ledge and he falls down. Where did that Andorian come from? I didn't think they were in the Delta Quadrant.
Oh, actually, I know. He must be one of the Andorians that's working in that bar in the far corner of the Delta Quadrant that we saw in the ongoing comics. He works there yes. with the Tellarites and all the other Alpha Quadrant aliens who populate that bar.
Well, as you know, Jeffrey Combs is everywhere.
He is everywhere.
So,
well, it sounds like great. Are there any other memories from the night?
Well, the other thing was the preview for season 3 that they showed at the very, very end. They showed clips of Best of Both Worlds Part 1 and Yesterday's Enterprise. And they looked so good. They showed the battle between the Romulan Birds of Prey and the Enterprises. Wow. I'm just miles above anything we'd seen in Q Who. We can talk about the effects in a little bit. Such good effects. And the restoration that CBS Digital has done was just amazing. If they don't do a season 3 theatrical event, I think people are going to riot after having seen that footage.
I'm pretty sure they'll do. I mean, these have been very successful events as far as I know.
Oh, yeah. I heard there was a screening in New York, or several screenings in New York that sold out. Ours was full to the brim. You know, they're not going to sell out every one, but the sales were really good for this one from everything I could tell, better than season 1.
And like you say, I saw Larry tweet after going to the theatrical event that he felt that, like you said, the teasers for season 3 were possibly the greatest thing that came out of the whole event for him.
Yeah, aside from the extra footage in Measure of a Man, certainly I would say that's absolutely true. I mean, some of the stuff behind the scenes, the Calgary meetup was kind of cool. But yes, that footage from season 3, I remember they did the same thing for season 2, and I was like, okay, well, that's what season 2 looks like. But there's something, you know, they grew the beard in season 2, but there's such a whole other level. They get the new uniforms, the visual effects get a huge upgrade. It's going to be the season that you're going to really look forward to, even considering that season 2 has some pretty good episodes in it.
Yeah, definitely. And I feel like we'll probably start having a diminishing feeling of this as we go on and we start getting into seasons 5, 6, 7, where the overall effects yeah. and all were a bit more polished than they were early on. But
well, yeah. it's going to be great here on out, really. The season 1, yeah. I have a feeling they were kind of wishing they could not start with season 1. Because, yeah, the show only gets better from here, aside from some things in season 7 that we don't need to talk about. Yeah. These sets are going to be great. And I can't imagine a Trekkie who's not going to own these sets, judging by the quality of the restoration and all of that.
Yeah. You know, and as I've been watching Deep Space Nine again, every time I'm watching it, I'm just thinking, God, I cannot wait until this is remastered. I really want to see that station and the sets and the lighting and everything that's going on that show. So much detail. I really want to see that in HD. So I do hope they jump on that maybe before they get to the end. Maybe when they get to like season 6 of TNG, they can jump on that restoration as well.
Yeah. They've got a poll on StarTrek.com right now, you know, which should be the next series that gets upgraded to HD. And DS9 is winning over Voyager by a pretty substantial margin.
Yeah, I would expect. Although, like we've said before, Voyager wins every poll that StarTrek.com puts up.
But yes, I was impressed. The DS9, even though, as you say, Voyager is the big thing, people still want to see DS9 before Voyager when it comes to the remastering. Now, maybe they want to see that Voyager titles the credit sequence remastered before anything else, because that's the pinnacle. That's the pinnacle, Chris. But when it comes to the show itself, let's get DS9.
I just want to see Resolutions remastered so that I can really see the monkey in detail. Maybe if I can see his face more clearly, maybe I can figure out why he kept popping up all the time. You know, what was going on in his little monkey brain?
Yeah, I hear that with the HD remastering, when Acts 4 and 5 just become mounds of technobabble upon technobabble, that the HD remastering really starts making the characterization really strong and the plots really good, even when the technobabble is flying. It's really amazing what they can do with computers these days.
Maybe they'll remaster the technobabble as well, you know, kind of like bring some of the terminology up to date a little bit for the 21st century.
Yes.
Technobabble remastered. That's going to be the marketing campaign for it.
See, now we're going to get people complaining that we're bashing Voyager. We love Voyager. I just happen to be watching Voyager season 1 right now, and it's a little rocky, guys. I mean, it's good, but it's a little rocky.
Listen, no one can claim, and we've had people be actually rude to us on Twitter before, no one can claim that we don't like Voyager or give Voyager its fair shake, because we have more Voyager content produced for Trek FM, I think, than any other show. So just, but look, we're going to talk about the good and the bad of Star Trek. That's what we do.
Exactly.
Speaking of the good, Greg, let's go on to our next story. Did you see this snippet from G4's Attack of the Show that had Jonathan Frakes and LeVar Burton talking about the season 2 Blu-ray, amongst other things from the filming of TNG?
Yeah, you won't typically find me watching G4, but this clip was actually really great. Obviously, LeVar and Jonathan, Johnny as I call him, they know exactly what to do. They've been doing convention circuits long enough. They're outgoing personalities, and they're just so good. This clip was really good. And even the interviewer was pretty good. I recommend all of our viewers go ahead and pause, watch the clip, and come back. It's really good. And yeah, they're promoting the Blu-ray, as you say, which is coming out on Tuesday. And, you know, just kvetching about, you know, what it was like filming it, some of the fun stuff. And their view, you know, as fans at this point, at seeing the remastered film stock and seeing the remastered visual effects.
They were really hilarious. I thought they, you know, Jonathan Frakes, or Johnny as you call him, and Marina Sirtis, they're hilarious when they're together. I haven't actually seen Frakes and Burton together so often myself, because I don't get to go to cons or, you know, see much of that. They were really hilarious together. And everything from reenacting the camera shake after being hit by a photon torpedo to... Yeah. I loved Frakes' story about how the whole beard came about.
Yes, they were mentioning beard by committee, where basically... You know, Frakes wanted to grow a beard because what he said, he hates shaving, which I absolutely understand. Season 1 Greg right now, but I'm hating it. The shaving part of it. But what he said is, not only did he just decide to grow a beard and he just did it, who was it that actually wanted to be a naval? It was like a certain naval style of beer.
Well, it's Gene Roddenberry.
It's Gene Roddenberry. So right down from the top, it has to be the specific navel beard. And so they came in and they gathered around him with, what was it, eyeliner? Some sort of makeup sticks?
Something, yeah, something like that, yeah.
And they drew in beards physically on his face, and they erased it and drew a little bit more, and let's see how deep the neck could go. And they designed the perfect Riker beard. I think they put more effort into designing the Riker beard than they did in updating the Naked Now for, you know, to be on TNG.
Maybe. It was just an interesting story. Yeah, he's like, I came in with the beard, and they're like, I like it, but we'll shape it, and we'll make it navel, and it'll be a thing.
I'm wondering, who else did they do that with? Like, were they trying to decide exactly how much hair Patrick Stewart should have? Was it like down to that level of granularity?
Maybe so, especially with Troy's hair.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to say, in season two, Troy looks so much better than season one.
That is quite true. You know, I wonder if they use the same makeup. There's that spot on the back of Porthos that they have to draw in when it's the other dog. So I apparently they're just using this stuff all the time around on set. I'm looking forward to hearing how else they used it.
Right. I like that spot on his back. Let's make it a thing. It will shape it. Right. It'll be navel.
I wonder if they actually ended up modifying the Porthos that had a spot. Like, well, the spot could be shaped a little bit. What if it was like a little bit rounder and a little bit further back? And we really want them to match, so let's go ahead and do it on both dogs.
Take him and get hair implants.
Yes, indeed.
The other thing I liked from this was the bit about Alpha 39, the special emergency beam out code Alpha 39.
What was this? They were saying that anytime you're in like an awkward situation, like you're on a date that's not going very well, or someone walks up to you and starts a conversation, and you just really don't want to be there, you just have to tap your comm badge and say Alpha 39, and you get an instant beam right back to your quarters from wherever you are. It doesn't matter if you're on Earth, on a starship, you're at a convention, need to get out of there, Alpha 39.
It beams you right back to your quarters. And that would be very convenient for Riker because, you know, he's in an awkward situation with some lady on 10 Forward who's, for some unknown reason, he's not quite interested in her. He could just Alpha 39 beam back to his quarters where he already has a much more interesting lady waiting for him.
This is quite true, yes. Of course, Geordi keeps trying to, like, hold on to a lady and then do Alpha 39, and the transporter just won't. It just won't bring her along. It just leaves her.
Right, the beam, it only envelops him.
Yes. It's like, no, I want to bring her with me!
Which is interesting because, in Star Trek IV, when Julian leaps onto Kirk and gets beamed onto the Bird of Prey, worked fine. But if that had been Geordi, she leaped on him, she would have ended up just falling flat on her face in the middle of the park.
Well, that's why we say, the Enterprise, as Sonny Gomez says, the Enterprise has intelligent circuits. It's paying attention. It knows what's going on. It's looking out for everyone's best interests.
I guess so. So everyone, go over and watch this. We'll put a link in the show notes. It's about a 9-minute, 10-minute video clip. Very, very funny stuff. Okay, Greg, we're going to take a little break from news now, and we have a new sponsor on the Ready Room, and we're very pleased to welcome aboard Squarespace as a sponsor of Trek FM and the Ready Room. Now, Greg, you often send me messages, and you say, can I tell you about something I really like?
I do.
Now, what is that all about?
Well, I mean, you've got Squarespace right here. It's something I really like, something I really want to talk about. You know, we use Squarespace actually on Trek FM. Like, if you come to our site and you go, wow, this looks really cool, that's not just because Chris is an amazing coder. It's also because Squarespace just makes this stuff easy to set up and makes it easy to put what you want, the site you want to make, makes it easy to put it online.
It absolutely is. I have to tell you, I've been a designer for the web since the web started. you know, what we know of the web these days. Designing websites back in even 1995, I was doing it. I've tried a lot of things, and the reason I built Trek FM on Squarespace is because I found it was absolutely the most amazing platform to build on. I use it for not only Trek FM, but for quite a few other sites that I manage, and you really can't find anything better than Squarespace. It's wonderful that if you want a simple blog, you can go on. They have fantastic professionally designed templates you can just drop your stuff right into. You don't have to do anything, and it's going to look fantastic. And it's drag and drop, even with the images now, which is really cool in Squarespace 6. If you want to put an image in an article, you don't have to mess with all these folders and uploading and stuff like you do on WordPress and other systems. You just drag it from your desktop right into the browser window, and it's there. It's really amazing.
And one thing I really like about Squarespace is the responsive designs, because you can look at Trek FM on your big Mac screen, or you can look at your iPad or your iPhone, or if you've got one of those crazy Surface things, and it's always going to look really good, because Squarespace is dynamically, you know, changing the page to look good on any type of screen.
That is the cool thing. The new Squarespace 6, which they just fully rolled out to the public not too long ago, does have, like you're saying, this way of adapting the site to any screen format. So whether you're on the desktop or mobile device, it's just, you know, we used to build sites where you have like a mobile version and you have a desktop version, and you try to use code to detect which one it is and, you know, serve up this site or that site. It's kind of a nightmare in terms of maintenance and design. It can be, depending on the complexity of your site. But Squarespace 6 makes that extremely simple.
Yeah, you just don't want to spend all of your time working on the back end of your site. You want to be making stuff. You want to be showing people, here's the content. And Squarespace helps the internet get out of the way, basically, between you and your audience. It helps it all just go much more smoothly.
It absolutely does. And the one other thing that is new in Squarespace 6 that I think most of our listeners would really enjoy is the social media integration. Now, you could integrate with social media in Squarespace 5 as well, but they actually have a push content system in Squarespace 6 where you can schedule, you can set up that when I post an article, it's going to automatically push this out to my Twitter feed, you know, to my Facebook, to my other social media outlets. And it makes self-promotion extremely simple. So we highly recommend this system, Squarespace. I use it for all of my sites. And Trek FM, frankly, wouldn't be possible without the power behind Squarespace.
Now, Chris, I mean, Squarespace sounds really, really good. Now, my question is, what are they doing to help out our listeners? I mean, our listeners want to use Squarespace. They think this sounds great. Are they doing anything to help them out?
Well, they are doing a few things. Now, of course, you can get a complimentary Ractigino.
That sounds delicious.
Apart from the drinks, you can also get 10% off when you sign up for Squarespace. And we would love for you to go try it. You could just go to squarespace.com/trek and use the offer code TREK12. That's T-R-E-K 12.
As this is the month of 12.
That's right. That's right. It's start date 12. And so when you sign up, squarespace.com/trekfm, enter the code TREK12, and you can get 10% off. And the prices are fantastic, too, and it's very simple. There are basically two options. One of them is $8 per month before the discount. One of them is $16 per month before the discount. $16 completely unlimited, and $8 is still better than what you're going to get from pretty much anywhere. So go over, try that out, and help support Trek FM and the show, and you'll get one of the most beautiful blogs on the internet all at the same time.
So this week has some kind of sad news as well as some very heartening news for fans of the Navy and fans of the ship called Enterprise. Yeah, of course, as everyone knows, in the really fantastic 1986 Star Trek film called The Voyage Home, the Enterprise is actually really prominently featured. Chekhov goes on there. He's looking for the nuclear vessels. He escapes because, you know, it's really easy just to get on the Enterprise, then get off, especially if you know nothing about Navy security whatsoever. Our boys just, they really don't know what they're doing, basically, is what the screenwriters are trying to say. Okay, The Enterprise is great. It's been in service for about 60 years. This week, they finally decommissioned the Enterprise. That's right. They mothballed her. And I don't know about you, but as a Star Trek fan, that was making me pretty sad to know that there wouldn't be a ship carrying the name Enterprise.
Right. Yeah, we expect that there is always some sort of ship named Enterprise, prominent ship named Enterprise, that's in active service
right.
at some time. And but even though this most famous of all American aircraft carriers is going to be coming to dock for the last time, actually it was December 1st is when the ship was inactivated, which I suppose is a word. I didn't know, but that's what the Navy says. That's the terminology that they're using.
And now they have to tow it around, actually, the bottom of South America, actually bring it up to around where I am, up in the Pacific Northwest, so they can remove the nuclear reactors and basically tear her apart for scrap. Because they're actually going to be using pieces of her in new ships, and they have to, you know, bury the nuclear material. It's all this big process that's starting this week.
Okay, so that's what they're doing. They're actually not going to just put the ship in a museum. They're going to put... Because we have, like, down in Alabama, we have old battleships. Well, the USS Alabama. Surprise.
Yeah.
Which is actually a museum. It has been turned into a museum in the harbor.
The difficulty is once they've taken the nuclear materials out, they have to actually cut into the ship. And there's no way... It doesn't even look like an aircraft carrier when they're done with the process.
And I see.
So yeah, they can't do anything like turning it into a museum.
Yeah.
So they are replacing her with the Gerald Ford, is going to be the new flagship of the Navy fleet. We've known about this for a little while. The news that came out this week is that they're going to be naming CVN-80 the Enterprise, which got retweeted like crazy among Star Trek fans.
Of course, yeah. Now, of course, when I found out, the first thing I said to you was, I certainly hope that they're going to name it the Enterprise A.
Yes, indeed. My worry is actually it's going to be the Enterprise B, in which case when they go on their maiden voyage, the radar is not going to be installed until next Tuesday.
Right, and when that big crisis breaks out, we're going to hear them phone in. I'm sorry, we're the only ship in the Pacific.
Yes. Yes, and we need to launch the fighters. Oh, shoot. They don't get installed until next Tuesday.
And I think the other thing you told me was that, Chris, I don't think they do that in the real Navy.
I don't believe they do. I think they had the Enterprise. This one will also be the Enterprise. It'll be a Ford-class ship, so it won't be Constitution-class, unfortunately. And actually, what's kind of cool about this ship is just like the previous Enterprise has been in use for about 60 years, this one's built the same way to be in use for decades to come. I'm thinking this one's still going to be in use when we invent warp drive in 2061. So we can go right from this ship into naming the first warp ship the Enterprise.
Yes, in our Star Trek universe, we can absolutely do that. I'm not confident that we'll invent warp drive by 2061, but it would be cool if we did.
We've got 50 years, Chris. That's plenty. That's plenty of time.
Oh, but I do think that it may not be warp capable, but some type of spacecraft other than the very basic things we have right now, I think could definitely be in our lives by 2061, and you know, humans going to Mars could be happening by then, and so yeah, maybe this is our last Enterprise on the ocean before we transition into space. So,
yeah, I mean, of course, the Navy will still be running, as we know from Reed, the Navy's still doing stuff, but yeah, I think they're hopefully going to pass the name Enterprise on to the space-going vessels. That's the next step. That's the excitement that I'm waiting for. But it is good to know that there will always be a ship called the Enterprise.
The color of infinity inside an empty glass. I'm squinting my eye and turning off an
So, Greg, let's move into movie news and rumors. We didn't have any last week, but this week we have a very big item that has come out, something that we've all been waiting for, and that is finally some kind of official word from Paramount about the fact that there is a Star Trek movie coming out next year, apparently.
Apparently there is.
It has a story.
I sent you a frantic iMessage. Throw out the rundown, Chris. The synopsis is here.
Now, of course, the synopsis came out and certain sites immediately ran with every conceivable rehash of every rumor that we've ever talked about in Star Trek fandom related to this movie, even though the synopsis itself no longer supports some of these ideas. But
it's the craziest thing. You know how they say, I forget what, I think it might be Poe's law, one of these laws where you can take a text and make it mean whatever you want. That whatever it is, it'll just support whatever your view was going in. I think we should go ahead and read the synopsis, Chris. Shall I go ahead and read the synopsis?
Yes.
In summer 2013, pioneering director J.J. Abrams will deliver an explosive action thriller that takes Star Trek into darkness. When the crew of the Enterprise is called back home, they find an unstoppable force of terror from within their own organization has detonated the fleet and everything it stands for, leaving our world in a state of crisis. With a personal score to settle, Captain Kirk leads a manhunt to a war zone world to capture a one-man weapon of mass destruction. As our heroes are propelled into an epic chess game of life and death, love will be challenged, friendships will be torn apart, and sacrifices must be made for the only family Kirk has left, his crew.
So what does this mean to you?
Clearly, it's Khan.
Obviously.
No, wait, no, sorry. Clearly, it's Gary Mitchell. Wait, no, I'm sorry. Clearly, it's Harry Mudd.
Now, Greg, you're missing something very obvious here in the synopsis that everyone else picked up on, and I don't know why you didn't. But, you know, when I read through this, the first thing that came into my mind was that Spock's going to die in this movie.
Clearly, I saw that. I was reading it verbatim. I'm sure I skipped over the part where it says that he loses his first officer or his best friend. Goodness, yes. No, I saw an article. I think we saw this article that it was.
We did.
The five things we know based on the synopsis and. Or, yeah. Anyway. Okay.
And one of them was that Spock is going to die in this movie.
Right, which is based off that stupid rumor that we talked about, what was it, 2 weeks ago? Where this. One part of a quote was taken completely out of context.
Yeah. And in this article, they actually said Zachary Quinto said recently that he is not interested in doing any more Star Trek movies. Like, no, he didn't say that at all. That's not what he said.
They just made up that that was a thing that came out of Zachary Quinto's mouth, when in fact he was saying he doesn't want to play serial killers anymore. And I haven't read the Into Darkness script. We do have a copy of it, of course, in the Trek FM exclusives vault that's being embargoed.
From our very exclusive sources, yes.
Yes. But it's being embargoed, of course, until, you know, the day before release. So we're not allowed to say anything. But I still don't think that Spock is going to be playing a serial killer in Star Trek Into Darkness.
I don't think so. You know, unless Suter from Voyager is going to be making a cameo appearance in this movie.
So there's some interesting things about the synopsis, and I wanted to get your opinion on what they might mean. Okay, so the first one is about an unstoppable force of terror from within Starfleet that has, quote, detonated the fleet and everything it stands for. Now, leaving aside the questionable use of the verb detonate, and also how it can blow up, I guess is what they mean. They just didn't want to say blow up in an official synopsis. Everything it stands for. Okay, so pedantics aside, what do you think this actually means?
Well, I've been thinking about it, and I have to say that, like you said, the use of the verb to detonate right here is very questionable, because At first you think, well, they detonated the fleet. They blew up the entire fleet and everything it stands for. Okay, wait, so they actually blew up everything it stands for?
Yeah.
I don't quite understand what you're going for here. I don't know. I mean, I kind of took this as some sort of mutiny within Starfleet. I have to admit that because we've been told that Cannon Batch is playing a familiar character from Star Trek, I did think that, well, maybe it is Gary Mitchell, except in this case, Gary Mitchell is at Starfleet Command somehow. Like the events are playing out differently than they did in the original series. But maybe that is him there, and he is trying to... there's like a coup d'etat going on within Starfleet or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, and that's possible. That's not something I'm going on. I don't think it's Gary Mitchell, partially because, yes, they covered the Gary Mitchell story in the comics. Now, okay, the comics aren't 100% canon, but it would be pretty ridiculous to do Gary Mitchell in the comic and then do him again in the film.
Yeah.
And on top of that, this just doesn't sound like... It doesn't really sound like Gary Mitchell to me. This sounds like a secondary bad guy, or it sounds like... there's more than one plot going on. And if they did Gary Mitchell, like, he wouldn't be in Starfleet. Like, this sounds more like a disgruntled admiral or something. Like, he designed his uniforms, but then they didn't build it correctly, and he just got really angry and set off all the self-destruct codes. It sounds something more like that. And it's also to make it a little bit more believable that the Enterprise is the only ship in the quadrant. You know, not just saying it, but yes, let's actually blow up the Earth Defense Fleet and let's see what happens at that point. Of course, they blew up the fleet in Space Adventure 2009 and now we're blowing it up again. Apparently, they just make ships really, really, really fast.
Really fast. They can build those things so quickly. You know, the Enterprise D took, what, like 20, it's more than that, years of development before it was actually built and put into service. But apparently in the Abrams verse, I mean, you can just churn these. It's like baking cookies. It's like they put the little, they squeeze a little ship mold out, they slide it in, and like 20 minutes later, you've got a whole fleet again.
And I'm really astonished, you know, Space Adventure 2009 killed off an entire graduating class from Starfleet Academy, right. And as well as the rest of the crews and captains on those ships. But apparently they've rebuilt everything already. And then they're going to blow it up again. Okay, so there's that situation.
Okay, well, let me ask you this. This is the other thing that I think you got from this. So, Cannon Batch is playing some character. So perhaps this is a disgruntled admiral whose uniform didn't turn out well. And Cannon Batch is actually playing the one-man weapon of mass destruction that they mentioned on some planet somewhere else. Now, you told me who you think this is.
I did. Now, people are saying, one-man weapon of mass destruction? Why, this sounds like Khan. Or, why, this sounds like Gary Mitchell. But it doesn't, really. I mean, maybe Gary Mitchell to some extent. Khan, not at all. Khan's not a one-man weapon of mass destruction. That's ridiculous. But there is someone who is a one-man weapon of mass destruction who is on a remote planet that they go and visit, and that's Charlie Evans.
Yep.
Charlie X. It's like everyone's forgotten that Charlie X is a person that exists. You know, this is a character from the original series, a really, actually a pretty good episode.
Yeah.
But I don't see, I see a couple of people here and there, but none of the big articles about the movie that I see dissecting the synopsis are talking about him.
Right, yeah. Yeah, certainly some fans posting in comment threads or somewhere have mentioned Charlie X. But yeah, I haven't seen any big official speculation about Charlie X that I can recall.
But here's straight from the source, Memory Alpha, Evans' powers, telepathy, telekinesis, the ability to make matter vanish, to create matter and to rearrange the structure of matter, the ability to influence the operation of mechanical devices, and the ability to alter the physiology of living beings and to influence their mental processes. Does this not sound like a one-man weapon of mass destruction?
It does. And you know, we saw in Charlie X, how he reacts when he gets angry. And then when he becomes, it goes beyond anger. It becomes like a vengeance, right? That he feels like he's been mistreated. And then he will just go on a rampage. So I actually really like this theory. I think that this actually is very likely who Cannon Batch is playing. Charlie X.
Charlie X. I think we're right on board here. What Mr. Evans wants, Mr. Evans gets. And that's what we're going to get in To Darkness.
By the end of the first season of The Next Generation, the writers wanted to introduce a new enemy to oppose Picard and his crew, but they couldn't quite pull it off in the neutral zone. So in the second season, we finally got the Borg in Q-Who. And today we're going to talk about Q-Who, and to help us do that, we have with us, from the wilderness, our managing editor, Mistress Charlene Schmidt. Hello, Char.
Yes, I am here from the wilderness that is Fargo, North Dakota.
And we also have with us someone named Drew Who.
That's me.
Oh, of course, everyone knows Landru as our TOS editor at Trek FM. So, Greg, you chose Q Who because you and Landru here both had a chance to go see this on the big screen the other night, while I in Japan and Char in the wilderness were unable to do so.
Yeah, apparently Fargo is so far removed from civilization, as they call it, that we did not get a wonderful screening of the TNG episodes.
We had plenty of room in my theater for you.
Oh, really?
Yeah, well, it's like a good 8-hour drive, buddy. Closest I had was Twin Cities, 4 hours away. And
oh, geez.
No, had to teach.
Well, I was surprised, Drew, because you were mentioning that your theater was not that packed. Mine was packed to the brim. It probably wasn't quite sold out, but it was almost completely full of people by the time the screening started.
So, Greg, was your theater so full that it was about to detonate?
Yes, I think it was about to detonate as well as everything it stands for.
Yeah.
But meanwhile, it sounds like Drew's audience was carved up like a roast. What happened there?
Well, I don't know. I mean, Bloomington is a college town. And I think maybe it was skewed too old. You know, Next Generation is, you know, 25 years old, and
maybe
all
they've been
the
playing Voyager remastered.
Exactly. If
yeah.
they had been Voyager remastered, I think
now
the
you're
theater
talking.
Would have been full.
So Drew, did your theater have a promotion like only senior prices for this showing?
Well, all the prices were the same. So
all the
yes.
prices were $15. I don't know if you realize that.
Oh my gosh,
I'm seeing
$15.
The yours wasn't?
Oh my! No, mine was $12.50, but
oh,
still,
$15 to see Star Trek.
God,
I mean, granted, it's HD, it's on the big screen, it's pre-release, so it's before the Blu-ray comes out. I'm like,
listen to you guys.
I'm only spending $12 to see The Hobbit in 3D, and that's like a brand new like 3-hour film.
You guys are too spoiled over there. You know, one movie ticket over here is about $35 for whatever you want to go see.
That's why you go on Men's Day or Ladies' Day. When it's
yeah.
only a
that's
thousand.
Why we go on Ladies' Day. You know, remember when you lived here, Greg, and we used to dress up? We used to do our bosom buddies bit, and we used to go.
Oh, Chris-chan, I want to go see Star Trek. Can we go, please?
I want to see this so badly.
And
no, that's Star Trek in Japanese. It's very difficult to say Star Trek in Japanese because you have to say it with a Japanese accent.
You do.
Yes. No, you're absolutely right that I'm prices in Japan are higher, but the event was quite expensive. But as we talked about on the news, it was well worth it, especially for Measure of a Man. But even Q-Who, I was really enjoying much more than, say, Justice. Or what was the other one? Data Lore? Whatever we watched last time. This felt like much more of a movie event. Like, these are two movie cinematic episodes that we got this time around.
This was definitely the best Next Generation movie I've seen.
That's going a bit
burn.
Far. Man.
Well, let's talk about the episode, because the beginning of this episode, it's like there's some whole other thing going on, and then eventually we get to the actual episode, because we've got this whole thing with the introduction of Sonia Gomez at the beginning, who apparently, Drew, I hope your wife isn't listening to the show, you were quite enamored with.
Well, I thought she was really cute, but, you know, she had a lot of promise that I don't think that they kept up with poor Miss Gomez, in that she's not used. She gets her hot chocolate and she spills it on Picard, and then that's it. And then we see her a few minutes later when she's like, "Oh, the Borg are scary," and Geordi's like, "It's okay, I'm here for you."
Right.
But then we never see her again. I mean, she's like, she transports people in the next episode. And I'm wondering if there was bigger plans for her. Was she supposed to be like, was she supposed to die? Was she supposed to be assimilated, maybe? Like you set up this cute little thing in this overly dramatic episode, and then you don't do anything with it.
Yeah, and
or
was
she supposed to stick around and be Geordi's love interest?
You know, I was thinking as I was watching the theater, well, maybe this was like early on in season two. So now Geordi's the, you know, chief engineer. Maybe they're wanting to like really work hard to show him down there, and they're having to give him a character to bounce off of. But they've already established that he's chief engineer. They don't need to construct some extra thing. And it does come across, when you watch it, it's like, oh, she's going to get assimilated. She's going to die, or she's going to make some big mistake, or she's going to do something heroic. Charlene, what did you think about when you saw her on the screen? Did you even remember that she was in this episode?
To tell you the truth, no, I didn't remember her at all. So it was almost like watching this thing for the first time. It had been so long since I've seen it. And you know what my thought was, is like, this is the prototype of PDH. She's this really overeager ensign who spilled hot chocolate all over Captain Picard and is like pawing him as she's trying, oh, please, please let me help you smear it all over your uniform. I don't know what good that was doing, but that's what she was aiming for, I guess.
Which is why Greg's screen name today is Greg Rubbing Picard's Chest. Yes. Harbin.
Among other things, I'm sure. Well, and
on Memory Alpha, there's a clip from the scene with the quote from Picard, "Yes, Ensign, it's all over me."
Yes, he actually says this. So it's this really weird, awkward scene.
And when I was watching it this time, I was thinking that when she turns around and she spills the coffee, I was really expecting the live studio audience to burst out into laughter. Where was the laugh track for this part of this episode?
That's right. Maybe this was a backdoor pilot for that engineering-based three-camera sitcom, you know, Geordi and Sonia. Coming soon to NBC. That
I would
could
watch
very
that.
Well be.
Yeah, I could see exactly. That happening, where they've got like that underlying sexual tension, and then the audience is just waiting for something to finally happen between the two.
But they know that it's Geordi, and it never will.
And every time they get really close and they're about to do something, like they hear a clang from the Jeffries tube, and it's because Argyle knocked over his still.
Yeah.
Swearing from behind the thing.
Yes.
I really love that scene where two characters are talking about fixing, you know, the warp core, and they're talking about, you know, the phase discriminator and leveraging. And there's this other character who thinks it's all a metaphor for sexual things.
Right. And,
yeah. Classic
sitcom
stuff.
We need to eject the core.
Yeah. Oh,
right,
my God.
Right.
What do they mean, eject the core? What does that mean?
It's going to breach. Do a barrel roll! Get out of there!
Do a barrel roll! The barrel roll! Let me go on!
Wait, now I'm mixing in Star Trek 3. I'm sorry.
Well, you know, that was the plan. That was going to be like Don Knotts' big comeback. He was going to bring the character of Mr. Furley onto this new show, and he was going to misinterpret everything that was going on in engineering.
I do like, you know, every time you have a sitcom, you have to have the catchphrase, like, you know, the Fonz walks in, he's like, hey, or, you know, you've got Kramer skidding into Jerry's apartment every time. You know, every time Geordi enters a scene, he does a barrel roll. Just every right. single time, no matter whether there's a warp core breach or not.
Yes, yes, he does that. And then, of course, Miss Lovely Gomez, she spills hot chocolate all over some kind of console in engineering. And then you cue that laugh track. It's got to happen at least once every episode. It's her trademark.
Every episode they were doing that. You know, it's too bad they didn't continue to use her, because if you go forward to season 5 with Cause and Effect, I think that show would have been excellent if she had knocked over her hot chocolate each time they went through the cycle.
That would have worked really well, actually, yes.
And you know, to break it up, you know, towards the end, like the fourth, fifth time through, you just hear the splash.
Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so in seriousness, I really have no idea what's going on here. There must have been something behind the scenes where they were thinking of bringing her on as a recurring character, and maybe it just didn't work out. They weren't impressed by the dailies. I think she's great, though. I thought
she did well, too.
As silly as the scenes are, and as much as they don't advance the plot, these are still pretty good scenes. They could just go in any episode. I wouldn't have minded seeing her again.
Well, the primitive version of Memory Alpha, the TNG companion by Larry Nemechek, It says that she showed enough comic potential in this show to be written in again on the next episode, but her character was dropped after that appearance. So it's obvious that they saw the dailies and they liked her, so they wrote her into the next episode. But then they just decided they didn't like her.
Strange. I don't know. She probably spilt hot chocolate on the director or something. And they...
They spilled it all over Rob Bowman, and that horrible mustache he had at the time, it just got all in there, and it was dripping off.
And it was just grossing everyone out.
And she kept rubbing the mustache like around, and that's uncomfortable.
No one needs to see that.
Now, did anybody recognize her? Because she's had some movie roles.
Oh, really?
I had to look her up, because I was like, what else has she done? And she played a prostitute in Lethal Weapon. She played, get this, the three-breasted prostitute in Total Recall.
Oh, my God.
I'm so glad her career took off.
In the original Total Recall. Like a year after this, probably right after they filmed this, she went and filmed Total Recall. And yes. She's famous for playing two prostitutes.
It's sort of like Will Wheaton. She had this idea that she was going to be a big movie star actress. So she said, I don't want to be this Sonia Gomez character who gets to hang out with LeVar Burton all day and spew technobabble. I want to be playing three-breasted aliens on terrible sci-fi films.
She aimed high.
Well, I was thinking... I would like to see a spinoff show about just her, where she walks around and she just talks way too much all the time until finally they trick her into going to the airlock, and then they just, you know, eject her out into space.
That would be a great payoff.
She's like on the bridge annoying everyone. She won't stop talking. She goes to 10 forward. Guinan kicks her out. It's just because she never stops talking.
Because she's on TNG, that wouldn't happen. Watching all the other series, I wouldn't. Janeway wouldn't bat an eye. Archer wouldn't bat an eye. Janeway, Sisko, they'd all, eject her right out into space.
Sisko wouldn't have even had to have dealt with her, because Kira would have taken care of that shit.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
That's very true.
That's very true. Well, let's move on to another character who's very important to the story, actually, and that's Whoopi Goldberg, who Star Trek fans may know as Guinan.
Maybe.
I don't know. Possible.
It's a long shot, but it's there. Well,
I thought she was at Singing Nun on that one episode. That was a weird episode. Right. Like, it didn't even have the Enterprise in it. I don't know.
So, correct me if I'm wrong here, thinking back, because it's been a while since I've really watched all of season 2 of TNG. I kind of remember this as being Now, this is the 16th episode, so we're a little bit more than halfway through the season. I kind of remember this as being the first time where the Guinan that I know as Guinan, who's this kind of companion to Picard, you know, intellectually, where they actually have some deep discussions, and she's kind of like his muse. I don't know the word I would use here, but is this the first time that this Guinan really makes an appearance?
Well,
or is there something a little bit before this?
She's always had little moments, and they've been playing it a little bit mysterious. But I think this was the first time we got the sense that she really has this huge amount of knowledge that she doesn't come from art.
Yeah,
like,
I think if you
watch the first half of season two, you can get the idea that she's just a bartender. Whereas if you watch this episode, okay, she's from a race of people that got destroyed by the Borg. She apparently has some sort of power that she's not using, but that she can do hand somethings at Q.
What was this little like weird cat claw gesture?
It's a martial arts pose.
Right.
She's like,
what is that? I really don't understand what was going on there. We never really learn about this either. Like when Q shows up.
No.
You know, she puts on that defensive posture and she mentions all these antics, like this past. She's dealt with Q before, and I'm thinking, really? Well, why didn't we learn anything more about this? Because I would love to know, like, where did Q and Guinan meet? Like, was she in bartending school with Q and he was, like, intentionally mixing up her drinks so that she got bad grades? Where's the history here? What's the connection? I want to know.
Yeah, I think there definitely is a non-canon novel that needs to be written, whether they met in the Nexus or...
You know, they come back to it in True Q and we get, like, a little bit more, but we don't ever really kind of find out what is this beef that she has with Q and that he has with her. And to be fair to Guinan here, Q started the claw off. He's the first one who did the claw.
This is true, but she took it and ran with it.
She saw his claw and she raised him a double claw.
I mean, it reminded me of, like, you know, Attack of the Clones, when Dooku's going up against Yoda and he just shoots the lightning at him and then Yoda can block it and he's gathering it up and shooting it back. It's like, what, are they Jedi Masters now? Battling it out in 10 forward? What is going on here?
Yeah, are they going to pull out lightsabers?
I think that was the director's original plan, was to have Q shooting lightning and Guinan deflecting it.
That should be a GIF. Can somebody make that where they're doing force lightning at each other?
Get on that, internet.
I actually looked up the background behind the episode here, and they say that, and I actually don't remember that I've seen The Color Purple, but it's been a long time, that Whoopi Goldberg's character, when she confronts her husband who's been abusing her, this gesture, this posture is what Whoopi Goldberg did in that movie, in The Color Purple.
Hmm.
And that's what she does to Q here as well, which kind of makes sense that, like, if she has this past history with Q and she feels like there's this tension between the two of them, and who knows what Q did in the past. I mean,
you know, Q says that Guinan used to go by another name. Was that other name Celia?
It might be.
And was her husband in The Color Purple another member of the Q continuum?
Oh dear.
See, this is,
was it Q in another guise?
Yeah,
exactly. Because
they can change their appearance.
Yeah
Mind blown.
Yeah, well, now we know. So if you're wondering, it's not that she's a Jedi Knight or anything like that. She's just, you know, it all comes together. And that's why she's wearing purple in this episode.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. That just totally caps it off.
I can't believe you guys missed all of this.
I feel so stupid not realizing it, but
you saw it on the big screen and you missed
it.
I mean, Char and I, we only have the benefit of standard definition here.
Yeah. And you still got this, Chris. Good for you, buddy.
Nice catch, Chris.
Yeah. Now,
there was an interesting thing on the big screen. We saw a behind-the-scenes video with the director, Rob Bowman, and he talked about, in the scene in 10 Forward, he wanted Q to be in the weirdest place possible. So he was looking around the set to try to figure out what's the weirdest place, and he found that weird column. Like, you'd never see a Starfleet crewman climb up onto the wall, however much synthahol they've had. But there's Q, like, raised up above everybody.
Oh, I don't know.
Well, yeah, you never know. I mean, Riker does look like to put his leg up on things.
Exactly. And if you give him a little bit of vodka, there's no telling what he'll do.
But I thought it was so cool. Like, he wasn't just standing there confronting Guinan or having this conversation with Picard. He's up in this weird place, and you can just instantly tell that he's this different kind of being. We don't have to be transported to a trial in, you know, 21st century, like mid-21st century, and he's wearing these big robes. All he has to do is be standing somewhere odd, and we instantly get that understanding, okay, this is a character. This is Q. He's different.
Yeah, very good point. And it was done effectively. Certainly, yeah, he's in some odd places. One thing I got to point out, though, along with Guinan, to backtrack just a tiny little bit, Guinan peeks out from under the counter.
Yes.
Did you guys catch this? What was she doing?
I laughed out loud in the theater.
She was practicing her, she really likes Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, so she was, you know, Oompa Loompa, doopity-doo. and then Q appeared, and that just happened to be at the same time.
It's a pure coincidence.
I missed that, too. I wasn't paying enough attention in this episode.
Well, when you see it on the big screen, you start noticing these little things.
Mm-hmm. I see. And
Tin Forward, it was empty, and, you know, that's what she does when there are no customers in there. Yes. And she feels safe because, you know, there's no view screen that anyone can turn on and see her.
Right. Yeah, she's going to leave the room.
I don't understand why they make her... She's looking out the window at the cube.
Right.
And then they're like, Guinan, we need you to go to your view screen so we can show you this Borg cube.
Yeah.
And so she walks out of the office, down the hall,
down the
around
corner.
And then finally into this little office area, and she turns on a tiny little monitor.
What? And it
where
has
they
to,
show
like...
her a tiny little Borg cube.
Right, yeah, it wasn't loud and proudly right there in the freaking window, right?
I'm thinking we don't see it, but she has got, like, Minority Report, like, pinch and zoom, and she can, like, go forward and backward and do all that stuff. It's like a fancy computer. We didn't get a chance to see it, but I... Something
right,
like
yeah,
that.
Of course.
Sure.
If you say so.
And they're really trying to include Guinan in this one. It's like, oh, Guinan, go ahead and come to the staff meeting. And then, so she's there for the staff meeting, she gives her little speech, and then something happens, and everybody goes back to the bridge, and Guinan just hangs out in the observation lounge until
so
everyone comes
this.
Back. She's like, there's going to be another staff meeting. I'm not going to bother going all the way back. To 10-4, they're going to call me back. I'm just going to hang out, read a book, you know, practice my hand gestures, and they'll be back before long.
Yes, yes, and there are quite a few staff meetings in this episode.
There really are.
Yeah, yeah, they have like, what, at least three? Maybe more?
At least.
Yeah, at least, because they've got one like early on. Well, do they have one about when Picard disappears? I'm thinking they have a staff meeting there. And then when Picard comes back, they have one. Then they have another one.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's, I like that Picard disappears for 6 hours, and he's on that shuttlecraft with Q, not talking to him. Like, for 6 hours. Can you imagine Q just being like, hey, Picard. Hey, Picard. Hey, Picard. Hey, Picard. Hey, Picard.
And he gets the ball. It reminds me of the West Wing. Toby used to throw his little ball when he's trying to write a speech for the president, and it ba-boom, boom. Ba-bum-bum. And that's what Q's doing for like 6 hours while Picard's being there just like, there are four lights. He's not going to be overtaken. There's nothing you can do. You cannot break Jean-Luc Picard.
No. Well, he's got some strong resolve. I think 6 hours of hearing that stupid ball against the wall, it would drive me insane. I would end up hitting him.
I mean, really, like, all Q wanted to do was join the crew. And Picard had just had this whole run-in with Sonya Gomez where she spills hot chocolate all over him. Fire Sonya and just put Q in there. Like, seriously. The solution's right there for the taking.
Yeah, well, and granted, Q even has a nice little cleaning service. It's instantaneous. Took care of that hot chocolate better than Billy Mays could himself.
That's very true.
Oxy-Q.
There you go. Hey, everybody, Q here, and I am here for Oxy-Q.
Stained carpet's a mess. Hot chocolate on your shirt? Snowballs in the face?
Actually, I just watched that episode. Those snowballs dried instantly.
Yeah.
Like, the next cut, their shirts were dry. And I'm like, wait a minute. Q's not there.
Because they evaporated into an airborne virus. As everyone knows, smells that's what snowballs do.
Yeah.
Holographic snowballs.
Holographic snowballs become viruses. As everyone knows.
Yeah, apparently.
Yeah, that's holographic tech 101 right there. I mean, every
it's too bad it wasn't a Voyager episode, or Brandon would have explained that it was Dacion particles in the holographic snowballs.
Right, and then all you have to do then is tech the tech.
Reverse the polarity.
And Dr. Crusher's not there to kill everybody, and so then they all live and they press the reset button and everything's fine. But in the middle, there's this really big mind-you-know-what story going on just to make you wonder, what in the world are you even talking about, Brandon?
Yes, indeed.
All right. Well, let's talk about the Borg themselves a little bit. Now, we've talked about the Borg on here a million times, but just what catches me in going back and watching this one, because we've become so accustomed to the Borg as the space zombies that they became in First Contact and Voyager and all. When I go back here to the very first time we see the Borg, and there's that scene where the one Borg has to, which takes a long time, by the way, he has to like remove all these various little attachments in order to beam the dead Borg drone back over to the ship,
yes,
or make him
yes.
disappear at any rate.
Actually, if I could jump in real quick, that was one change. Remind me, in the SD version, he just like fades away, right? The dead one?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. I think.
In the remastered, it's more like it's weird. It's like kind of like a poof. There's
a little bit of
smoke, and there's like a little bit of residue on the ground.
Well, see, that makes a lot more sense, because that's why I said at first to beam him back over, and then I thought, well, wait a minute, they don't beam them back over, they just disappear.
Right. He just disappears.
But the effect is such that you're not quite sure.
Yeah. But yeah, he's got to remove the little, like, what are you doing?
No.
Like,
he's a hive mind. What he's doing is he's reclaiming the valuable parts of that Borg. I mean, he's not doing anything preparatory to, like, beam him back or make him disappear. He's taking the valuable parts.
But I'm pretty sure that later on, when this happens, it's a much quicker process. Here at the beginning, there are, like, three separate knob things that he twists and removes from the drone.
He had an older hard drive or something where that required a little more work.
He was still using spinning drives.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
These are those early Borg that we talked about in the First Contact episode where it's just white makeup, and actually learned from Rob Bowman that they did just stick motherboards from computers on the armor because they just wanted to put anything they could.
Right.
But they still hold up really well, even on the big screen. The Borg makeup is still pretty scary.
But the thing is that they are like zombies later on. And here, when this particular Borg, when he finished taking the attachments off, and when he stood up and he looked straight out the camera, I thought, you know, at this point, the Borg are, they're basically just like the humans, except they're really old, pale guys in black leather. It was like if your grandfather put on a bunch of black leather, is what it looked
like. And connected the motherboards with duct tape.
I did want to ask if anybody on this panel has some experience with people in white makeup and black leather. I'm not going to say I personally do, but I think if you do, you know that that can be both scary and exciting at the same time.
Well, back in the 90s when I was in high school, I mean, there were definitely people who put cornstarch on their face, wore the black nail polish and the leather pants. That's about as close as I got.
Well, what you don't realize is the Borg are actually doing Matrix cosplay. They're normal guys. You know, they've got day jobs, you know, corporate stooges and all of that. But, you know, when they go to, you know, other places, they're doing the cosplay.
Right, yeah.
Well, it's more like they're doing the Matrix cosplay. Not like people inside the Matrix, but the actual computer system.
Right.
They wanted to be the computer, yeah. So if you follow the course of events in this episode, though, so he stands up, he beams back over to the ship. Shortly after, they tell Picard and the Enterprise crew that they are going to be punished. And then, not long after that, they lock a tractor beam onto the Enterprise. And I just wonder what's going on that cube over there with all that black leather.
Four guests and M parties, baby. Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking.
You take that duct tape, you go into the regeneration chamber, and you're not coming out until you're finished.
Right. You know, they don't call it a maturation chamber for the reason that you think.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's really not so much maturation as it is training.
So this is why Riker was so excited to go on an away mission.
That's why Riker was like,
right.
We have he to go over there. There is no other option. It is our
we have to take
only
Worf.
Course of action. And while he's saying that, Troy's eyes behind him,
yeah.
The look in Troy's eyes are like, Riker, you are a whack job. It's like he is saying the most insane yes. thing that she has ever heard.
Yeah, yeah, I loved it. You are crazy. Will, you just want to put your legs up on all these mechanized things, don't you? That's all you really want to do, isn't it? You crazy.
Yeah. At the poker game the week after this, Riker's like, yeah, when I was over on the ship, they had this cool alcove there. I like totally propped my leg up on it.
For 50 seconds.
It was awesome.
Okay, yeah. Wait, we didn't really... I had something I wanted to touch on before we talk about the Borg too much. Why they're actually there. Like, what the whole deal is with Q. And I was a little confused because, okay, we had Encounter at Farpoint where he puts humanity on trial. And he says, you know, you guys aren't ready. You don't know what you're doing. And you have crimes that you've committed. And you need to just go back to your little planet and shut up. But by the end of the episode, he's convinced them, or Picard's convinced Q, we do know what we're doing. We're fine. And Q lets them go. Now, why does that cause the Q to penalize Q? Why is he in this state where he wants to first join the crew and then show them that they're not really ready? Did you guys understand Q's motivations a little bit better than I did?
I just thought he was bored.
Well, the last encounter was when he offered Riker a chance to become part of the Continuum.
Yeah, that true. May okay. be what he was getting in trouble for.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Was offering okay. Q powers to humans.
But I do think that in Encounter at Farpoint, even though he says the Q Continuum is putting you on trial and all, I always felt like that was not the Q Continuum. That was more Q himself. And maybe he wasn't supposed to be meddling with humanity in the way that he was in the first place.
So this really is just a rogue Q, like Q on the loose.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking. Yeah, I wasn't joking when I thought that he was really just bored one day and thought, well, let's go provoke Picard. Let's see how he reacts to this. And he does.
Well, yeah. I do want to see the alternate version where Picard just says, okay, you can be a member of the crew. Like, I've always wanted a personal chef. If you can please
there
make me some of Meemaw's old recipes, that'd be really wonderful.
Q just brings Meemaw back.
I would love to see Yeoman Q.
Yes. It's Q and Meemaw. Here's, you know, you've got the Geordi and Sonya sitcom. You also have, right, you know, up next, sort of like TGIF, but with Star Trek, you've got Q and Meemaw in the kitchen.
Awesome. Love it. I'd watch it.
Oh.
Okay, so he does transport them to the Delta Quadrant, and Riker goes over looking for an S&M party, but instead he finds a Borg nursery, which I really think must have been really disappointing.
It had to have been. I mean, what a letdown. That's like the ultimate party blocker, right? Is a baby,
it's
children.
Babies.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like he's in this room, and Picard says, Riker, describe what you see. Like, well, there's like a changing station over there. There's like some blocks, I guess. There's a nanny or two. It's kind of like a preschool, Jean-Luc. Yeah.
And I hear crying.
Man,
he
was expecting like crazy, like, you know, like lasers. Like, well, not like phaser blast, but like a light show and like house
oh,
music.
Oh, like a rave?
A lot of
like
smoke.
A rave, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I found the baby thing kind of interesting here because we only see the Borg babies one other time, and that's in Voyager in Collective, I believe. And at that point, the Borg are completely the space zombies. And in Voyager, we know that, well, they're just assimilating worlds. And sometimes they assimilate babies. And so they put the babies in the maturation chamber so they can grow up and become drones, which makes no sense to me at all because it takes so many resources to raise children. If your goal is to assimilate other cultures to add to your collective perfection, why would you put all these resources into the babies when you're also assimilating all of these
adults? Okay, to the Borg's credit, though, I mean, all they really did for these children is they put them in these, I guess, cribs that you can just nicely tuck away into the wall.
Yeah.
That's all they did for them. Just left them there, and I mean,
but
okay, that's
still
it.
Takes
that's very
their,
efficient.
It still takes the resources, the energy resources of the collective to operate that.
To feed them or nourish them.
But going back to this episode, though, this is very much more of a sci-fi concept of biological life incorporating technology and becoming like a hybrid life form. That's what we get here. And then that's completely lost as the Borg go on. So when I do go back to this, I see that idea and I think that's kind of, to me, a more interesting approach to the Borg than what we ended up with in the end.
Well, what we don't have in this episode at all is the concept of assimilation. That we know that they're going to scrap the Enterprise for parts, but we don't have any danger. We definitely don't have the nanotubules or those things. What they're really saying is this is how the Borg reproduce. Like, I don't know
what they're saying.
You know, when a male Borg and a female Borg love each other very much. And then
and they make Borg babies.
On the sixth day, the Borg rabbi comes out and puts the first, he puts the first little
glues
Borg
the first motherboard on it
onto him. Right, and that's what we're seeing here. And I kind of do agree with you, Chris, that like this is saying this is a path even humanity could go down.
Right,
that they're not this hodgepodge. Like later on, what we see with the Borg is it's more like a cybernetic organism that's taking over organics, and they're just grabbing whatever they can. Here's some Klingons from over here, some Romulans, some humans, some species 8472, all mash it together. In this, they're much more of a singular race that reproduces in and of itself, and that it advances through conquest.
Right.
Which I think in the end, that's still the origin of the Borg. Like, there was one race, and they merged with technology. So there was, at some point in the past, a Borg home world, and that's what happened. But the timeline doesn't work out here, because we're getting this, and then just a few years later, we're getting the other.
Yeah.
So, like, if you could stretch this out over millennia, then that would make sense, yeah.
Yeah, like, these guys make sense. I mean, maybe as the guys that, you know, when the signal gets sent in Regeneration, the Enterprise episode, and it reaches them on the other side of the galaxy, maybe they are still that singular race, and it's before they really started pushing out. And then the Borg we see in, at least later on in Next Gen, is after they've been conquering and conquering and conquering, trying to reach the Alpha Quadrant. But this is before it happens so fast. It's best of both worlds. It's like the end of the next season, and they're already doing the assimilation thing.
And I picture it as going not just from regeneration, because that's only a couple of hundred years. I picture it going back like 500 years or 1,000 years in the past, personally.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, Guinan mentions this is a very old race. They've been at this for a long time. But that jump from this episode to best of both worlds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's too much of a change.
Pretty quick.
Yeah, but they weren't in the Delta Quadrant. I don't think he threw them that far because they had a sector number.
Oh, that's
like they
true.
Knew where they were and how long it would take for them to get to the nearest
station. I'm glad
station.
You mentioned this
right,
so much.
That's right.
Because it's not flinging them 70,000 light years. I think it was 7,000.
That is
so
true.
Yeah. I don't know if
it,
they
it would
actually
only take
say,
like a couple years for them to get back.
Right. I don't know if they actually say it's the Delta Quadrant that they're in.
They don't say it. No, they don't say that in the episode.
I think I've been saying the Delta Quadrant all episode. I think that's me retconning for them.
Yeah.
Because I think that's what's intended by what happens afterwards. We find out that they're in the Delta Quadrant, they're coming. I don't think the Borg are that close. I mean, do you really think they're that close to Earth already? That
no.
Because they just sort of, they're not even panicked. Like, you know, everyone's really panicked at in Caretaker, that they're so far away from home. In this one, they're like, well, let's just look around, smell the space roses, do some scans. Data can look for life forms.
Life forms. You tiny little life forms. You precious little life forms. Where are you?
Yeah.
And then we'll head back. I really feel like they're supposed to be much further away, and it's just that's where the Borg are at.
Well, yeah, because the numbers get all, in these early seasons especially, the numbers get all mixed up. You know, they haven't really set out the whole map of the galaxy yet. The writers have it in their heads, you know, because you get a lot of weird things like that. There is the theory that, and again, this is retconning the entire story here, which actually kind of weakens the end of it for me a little bit, because Q's actions are supposed to be to throw them into the path of the Borg, to introduce them to this great threat, to make his point. Whereas later, even in Voyager, it's already being rewritten that no, actually he was giving them an early warning because the Borg were already on their way to Earth, because they knew Earth was there because of first contact and regeneration.
Right. Well,
and here's where I think First Contact, actually, it's not a retcon per se. I really, really think First Contact created an alternate universe.
Yeah, we've talked about this.
Have we talked about it on the show? I think Voyager, Enterprise, both take place in a post-First Contact universe where the Borg were already coming. And Q-Who takes place where that isn't. Like, the Borg are always going to be attacking, but the reason that they're attacking shifts after the events of First Contact.
Yeah, we have talked about that on some past show, and there is that theory that especially Enterprise takes place in an alternate timeline, but it's very fuzzy, though. I mean, the Voyager one's kind of tough because they actually go to Deep Space Nine in Caretaker, which could, of course, be taking place in an alternate timeline. I mean, it's certainly possible. And otherwise, there isn't a lot of crossover. Yeah, but Quark, you know, Quark exists in every timeline.
Exactly.
And he tries to sell you stuff in every timeline. So it's certainly possible. Messy. It's an interesting debate, and it's a very fuzzy one, I think.
Yeah, because there's, in theory, an infinite amount of alternate universes out there. They can just vary by the smallest little action.
Right. In some universes, Riker has a naval beard, and in some universes, he has, you know, like a Grizzly Adams beard. And
sometimes he's got a ZZ Top beard in one of those universes.
I don't want to see that.
It'd blend in with his chest hair and be really weird.
Ooh,
I like the universe where the entire bridge crew grows the ZZ Top beards. and Picard he's bald, but he has the ZZ Top beard going.
I think he would look good, and I think Worf would look good, but Data, Wesley, Troy,
Yeah, Troy says, I'm getting a sense that no one thinks I'm attractive with this beard.
But it makes this episode better, because when Sonya spills the hot chocolate into Picard's ZZ Top beard, it is such a mess.
And then Q comes by and just snips off the beard with a pair of scissors, cleans it right up.
But you know, Data would look awesome with the ZZ Top beard, because he would put a distinctive gray streak all the way down.
Yes.
He absolutely would.
But only in later seasons. We wouldn't see this in season two.
Okay, well, one more thing about the Borg here, not to get into a big discussion on this one, but you know, the original concept of the Borg was that they were supposed to be insects. They were an insectoid race. And some of that carries over with the hive mind and kind of the collective and all. But of course, it was completely impractical at this point to create CGI insectoids or much less sue them as costumes. But sometimes I just try to picture, after we had Enterprise and we have the Zindi insectoid race, can you imagine how the Next Generation and Voyager and just the Borg in general could have been different or might have played out if they had been able to make them an insectoid race, kind of like the Zindi insectoids from the very start?
Well, I think they'd run into the same problem that they did with the Ferengi, when they were like, the Ferengi is this new big bad. and they manage to do it wrong, you know, every time. I think that Bug Borg, I don't think the viewers in the 80s would take it seriously.
Hmm.
Because with the 80s technology, it would be, you know, like a Star Wars cantina, you know, masks and kind of...
Yeah, but I'm not saying that. I'm saying imagine we had the CGI technology that we had in Enterprise back then, and they could have done... Like, the Zindi insectoid, I think, come off quite well. If they could have done Borg like that, because the interaction would be very different, because you wouldn't have the humanoid faces, even though... The Borg are very cold and unemotional. You still have that kind of face-to-face interaction with them.
Yeah. Now, do you think that would have hurt or helped in terms of seeing them as a threat? Because right. I think the Borg having humanoid faces, being a bipedal species, that I think adds to the threat. Now, if they were so different that they were really just they looked completely different from us. Of course, they're still a threat, but I don't know. I kind of like the way that they had to do this.
Well, it depends on how you view them as a threat, because insectoid Borg would be, you know, the outside, these aliens are coming to get us kind of thing. But I think that with them being humanoid, it kind of makes you think we could be this. I mean, right. If they were bugs... Then we'd be like, oh no, they're coming to get us, and we wouldn't have any kind of
right. Well, then they're just the bad
like
guys.
Like Hugh, would we have Iborg?
Right, right. If
they were just clicky bugs.
Well, maybe, yeah. But his name would have been Buzz instead.
Buzz.
Oh god.
Well, that's
no, sorry. Oh, boy. I have a book here. My kids have a little storybook about a fly, and his name is Buzz.
Aww.
Because there's a big misunderstanding of anyway, iBuzz. Well, all right.
I was going to say it's part of the, not to say retconning, but the Borg changing. In this episode, I feel like they could have been insectoid, and it wouldn't have really changed things at all. But they quickly, when they do introduce the concept of assimilation, and then later the idea of the nanobots, and it being an infection and it can take over, that does make it. It's a different kind of threat. And something that made TNG very unique as opposed to TOS or any of the TOS movies. Because you always just had conquering enemies. They'd come in, they'd subjugate us, or they'd kill us. This is an enemy that can make you a part of them.
Right.
And that's a threat, but that's not a threat that exists in this episode. If you really look at it, the only threat here is they're going to blow us up.
Right. Yeah. But that's kind of what I meant about them being a completely differently visual species. Would they just be those two-dimensional aliens where they want to kill us? Whereas here, they eventually, not yet, but eventually want to assimilate us and turn us into one of them. And then here's the other thing that I think we ought to mention is the whole thing. People actually thought... this was sort of something that came out in the very late 80s of technology taking over things. And people started to see, for the first time, the possibility of the threat of technology taking over humanity, becoming better than humanity. And robots were going to take over and take over the world because they were going to be smarter and more sentient than us. We would create them, but they would be our downfall. And people actually started to think that this would happen. I think the Borg were kind of a representation of that threat brought
definitely.
To life.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I agree with you guys that... I agree with you, Greg, that in this particular episode, they could have been insects, and it really wouldn't have changed anything about this story in terms of whether the story works or not. But as they played out, definitely, I think it's important. It's a good thing that they weren't able to make them insectoids like they had planned. I think you're right, Drew. I don't know if they would have come off... if they had the masks, like you said, yeah, they would have definitely come off like the Ferengi. Could you just see like the insects with fur coats on and laser whips?
And laser whips.
Laser whips.
But yeah, as it goes on, I think it's important that they are humanoid. And even though I think they went too far with the mindless space zombie angle on the Borg. But somewhere along the way, there is a point where there is a good balance between what we got here and what we ended up with. And it's mm-hmm. important that they are humanoid at that point. So I am glad that they were not insectoids.
Mm-hmm. That's definitely true. I think one thing that I really noticed after watching on the big screen is how short this whole thing is. That, I mean, it starts with the whole weird thing with Sonya, and then we've got the stuff with Guinan, but this, not really that much happens in this episode. It's really just a taste of the Borg.
Yeah.
And maybe they were trying to learn from the Ferengi, where maybe we spent too much time with the Ferengi, building them up as a threat. Let's show them, oh, they're big, they're powerful, but just a little piece of it, and then go away. And that way we can test to see, do fans think it's a great idea? How do they think? And then when the Borg were such a big hit, they knew they had something here. But I feel like this episode wasn't much of a risk. They could have, in theory, never gone back to the Borg.
Oh, sure.
And people wouldn't have rioted in the streets or anything.
The message of the story would have still remained that you think that you can handle anything that comes at you, but no, there are other things out there. And it could have just been there are other things in other parts of the galaxy that you are not ready for. And that could have been the moral of the story. You're not ready.
Right.
But because they brought him back, you know, it worked. But I don't think that the episode really can't find its mark. Like, we got the beginning with the hot chocolate, and then we've got 6 hours on a shuttlecraft with Picard and Q, and then he throws them the other side of the galaxy, and they're like, let's take a look around. And then the Borg come, and then they stare at each other. And then they talk, and then they stare at each other. And then they get carved up like a roast, and then they stare at each other. And then they try to run away, and they get chased, and then they leave. And there's just not much really happens. There's a lot of standing.
When I got to the end of the episode, and again, I've seen this episode countless times, but I'm watching it this time, and I got to the end, and when Picard and Guinan are talking at the very end, I was feeling like, oh, this is over. Like, I felt like that should have been somewhere in the middle of what was going on. It is very quick.
I totally agree. Feel that the ending was a little abrupt. Like, oh, we're done.
And it works in the bigger picture of The Next Generation and the Borg. But as a standalone episode, it does feel... Yeah. I mean, I think it's weird. Is a really good episode, but it does feel disjointed at times. Because the whole beginning, it is like... They were trying to do something in the beginning of this episode, and then eventually they get around to the actual main story. It's not like an A and a B story. It's like there's a B story that takes place in full at the beginning before the A story starts.
Yeah, it does a very weird way of shifting gears. Mm-hmm. That's not very typical.
But I like Q's message in this story, and... That's why this one sticks with me, and I really like this episode as the years go by. And as we talked about, I guess last week when we were talking about Harry Mudd, that the nice thing about Q is he can come on and he can be comical, but he also is intellectual, and he's there to make a point, not only to Picard, but to us as the viewers, a meaningful point about our lives or about society, and he does that here.
And he really, I mean, he kicks Picard in his complacency. He says, you think you're all high and mighty, you think you can prepare for anything, you think you can debate your way out of any encounter, but here's somebody who you can't debate with. This guy's, there's no negotiator that you can transport to a planet that can stop the Borg. And I think the show's never the same again. I think Picard's never the same after this. He realizes there's really, I've got to be more than one note of a captain. And I think that they all come to that understanding. And so it opens up the world of, we've got to do more than just do debates. It opens up who Guinan is. It says she's this powerful being. It says Q is just going to keep messing with them, and you never know when he shows up what he's going to do.
This is true.
Yeah, and it introduces the Borg, which, you know, at least on TNG, and I agree on Voyager, was one of the really great, you know, you got the Borg and you've got the Dominion. Those are like, and the Klingons, maybe from the original series, are main bad guys. So it all goes back to this little season two episode.
Yeah, so it begins here.
Yeah. So as short as it is, as disjointed as Sonya is, it's a really, really important episode.
Yeah, it opens all these doors that you were just talking about. Definitely.
And talking about Guinan, too, it establishes that she becomes this person who Picard goes to. Because you see Picard as the leader of the ship, and he's kind of isolated. And mm-hmm. maybe he talks to Troy from time to time, but he really doesn't have anyone who he can confide in. But Guinan becomes that person. And then you see it like going, of course, yesterday's Enterprise is a great example.
Yeah.
And generations before he goes into the Nexus, when he goes to Guinan's candle shop and he you know, talks to her. But she's unique in that she's the only person who Picard kind of becomes an ordinary person and goes to and gets advice from this person about what he should do, because he's normally that leader who everyone looks up to.
Right. And if I were him,
that really
you know
gets
what?
Established here in a way.
Yeah. If I were him, I would definitely go to Guinan too. I mean, you mentioned Troy. Would you trust Troy? I mean, Guinan does a way better job of sensing things than Troy ever does.
Troy, I don't think Troy can give Picard any meaningful advice, but because she's a counselor, and of course she's sworn to confidentiality as well, because she's a medical professional, even though you wouldn't necessarily know it from watching the show, but that is her job in Starfleet.
Allegedly, yes.
That he can talk to her, he can tell her things, so he can kind of unload to her, but she's not going to give him that kind of advice and insight that Guinan does. So Guinan, I think, is the more important person, and Guinan's really the counselor on the ship.
Exactly. Yes. And who's to say she doesn't keep things confidential either?
She says
she listens.
I did think there was a missed opportunity in this episode. Of course, this is the only season two episode in which the Borg appear, and Pulaski didn't appear in the episode at all. You know, if they'd brought Pulaski into one of the staff meetings, I think she could have gone over to the Borg cube and just cured all of them. Just de-Borgified all of them, solved the whole problem.
That's why she's not in this episode.
Well, yeah, she would have fixed it, and it would have been just too easy. We had to wait till Beverly was back, and
right,
then there's
and
a real danger.
Well, right, and then she could have killed him, though. And that, again, would have been
well,
too
true.
Easy.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and that's why they had Beverly go over, and Beverly's just panicked the whole time. If she'd really sat down and tried to cure those Borg, maybe we could have eliminated them once and for all, just with a terrible retrovirus.
Yeah, she just wasn't motivated.
That she accidentally introduced to them, right?
Well, yeah, it wouldn't be on purpose when it's Beverly. The thing is, Pulaski could have like removed the implants, brought them, you know. Reformed them. We could have put them all in a colony, and they could have had a reformed Borg academy. But because they just don't even call Pulaski. Like, I don't know what she's doing. She's like playing backgammon in the sick bay by herself.
She's probably on shore leave. She's on shore leave on Risa with Kyle Riker.
There you go. That's got to be it.
All right. Well, anything else you guys want to touch on? I think we've hit all the major points of Q-Who.
Well, Greg and I wanted to talk about the visual effects of the remastered version.
Yeah, and I guess I should start, because my main thing is I didn't feel like they changed enough. I felt like the Borg cube never felt... I mean, it just didn't feel different from the SD version. There were the explosions that just looked like little Compton explosions.
When
it was lacking a lot of the grandeur.
When they see the Borg cube regenerate, did they change that, or does it still look just as...
It's just the same model shot. Yep.
I see.
I thought there was an opportunity here for them to really boost things and make it look a little less cheesy. But I think, Drew, you were...
I'm of the opposite standpoint. Well, the only thing they did change was the matte painting of the interior of the Borg cube. They CG'd the painting because you could really see like giant brush strokes and lack of detail. which they really show in the bonus features that they showed before the episode. But I think that Next Generation Remastered is riding the balance that the TOS Remastered couldn't find. I was under the impression that TOS Remastered was supposed to be, we're going to take the original effects and we're going to, you know, because we can't go back to the originals, we'll CG the ship doing this stuff. But then as it went on, they were like, well, the ship can kind of, you know, rotate and do a barrel roll or something. And I think that they went too far. I think that Q-Who shows that TNG Remastered is, they're just going, they're taking the original crappy effects and they're making them in high definition. They're not doing a George Lucas special edition. I'm afraid that they're going to get, as the seasons go on, I'm afraid that they're going to start doing that and start enhancing things here and there and fixing things. Well, you know, no one will notice if we put more crew members in the background here, or, you know, put a CG dinosaur walking in front of the screen here. I think that this shows that they're, I mean, the effects did look cheesy. They did look corny when the Enterprise is running from the cube. They're both jittering up and down as they come past, and exactly the way that it did in the original. And I think that that's an attention to detail that I think that they need.
I guess I preferred the way that CBS Digital, it was two different teams that did season one, season two. I preferred what CBS did with season one. I thought it struck a balance between doing changes and leaving it alone. Like, they added a little bit of color onto the ship when it's rotating like a green planet, add a little bit of green to the ship. I don't have a problem with that. I think that adds to the realism. And it just, this felt a little rushed to me. And I need to watch it, you know, when the Blu-ray comes out, see all the other episodes. I do see where you're coming from, though, Drew. And I definitely don't like what they did with TOS Remastered. I thought they went way too far in just creating brand new shots, not just doing the old shots with CG, but let's do a weird shot where the ship flies right past camera. So I like them finding a balance. I think I just preferred the season one balance a little bit more.
Fair enough.
Well, I'm looking forward to getting my discs in a few days and checking this out for myself to see what they did. I do like what they did. Like you said, color from the planets, you know, lighting effects, that type of stuff, to me is nice. And it's not that big of a change because it's the kind of stuff that you wouldn't see in SD, even if it had been there originally. You might see it a little bit, but when you get to HD and you get that realism, you want to feel like you're actually there in the place. I'm perfectly fine with those kinds of changes. Now, the thing like in Chain of Command where Picard is being tortured and he's having to say there are four lights and they cut back and it's Hayden Christensen sitting there, I think that's completely out of line. And they shouldn't let George Lucas work on these anymore, especially since he's not actually affiliated with Star Trek. But
yes. Yeah,
that was way out of line. Yeah,
I definitely agree with that. And letting JJ change it to there are four lens flares, I thought was just
not acceptable.
It lacks the poetry.
It does. Definitely does. All right. Anything else you want to cover on Q-Who?
I think that mainly covers it. You know, we do, of course, want to rate the episode. So since I've pretty much said my piece, I'll just go ahead and say I would definitely give this episode 9 Borg babies out of 10. I thought it was just a superb episode from beginning to end. Even the weird episode where they're in the nursery and looking at the little child, I love it. I think it's a really good, especially a really good season 2 episode. Can't wait to see the rest of the set as well.
Yeah, I like it. It's a good episode, especially for season 2. There's a lot of hits and misses. This is one of the better hits. It opens up a lot of doors, as you mentioned, Greg. And so for that, I want to give it 7 hot chocolates.
Now, are those hot chocolates smeared all over Picard's chest?
Eventually they do get spilled all over. You betcha.
Well, I think that even if it is a little slow at times, a lot of times, and has some random scenes, I think that the message that the Starfleet isn't all it's cracked up to be and not ready for everything does stand the test of time. And it does introduce a villain that actually does work, unlike the Ferengi. So I'm going to give it a 4 Guinan tiger claws out of 5.
Nice.
Yeah, this episode for me is one of the better from the second season. And as you said, Drew, it introduces the Borg, who become a key part of all of Star Trek. And even the weird stuff, you know, like the Sonya part. I actually liked her performance. I kind of liked the character. And it's just kind of weird in this episode. But overall, and the message, which is, of course, what I look for in Star Trek primarily. There's a great message in here. I think it's well delivered, both by Q, dialogue with Picard, and the dialogue between Picard and Guinan as well. So I'm going to give this episode 8 carved roasts.
Nice.
All right. Well, we have, once again, a full Trek FM crew here. But nevertheless, Charlene, tell everyone where they can find you around the internets.
All right. Well, you can find me, of course, all over Trek.fm. I'm editing. I'm writing here and there. The episode guides will come back for Voyager, I promise. It's not going to end at season 1 and be done. I'm working on season 2 right now, as a matter of fact. I also do the Voyager podcast, To the Journey.
To the Journey!
You guys suck at this. I do this with Tristan Riddell and Laurie Sears. And then, of course, you can find me on Twitter, where I binge tweet on a regular basis. My name is Oh the Profanity.
How about you, Drew?
They can find me on Twitter at 005. Okay.
I think someone was reading Twitter last week. I was editing the show, and I tweeted. And now we come to the part of the show where Drew gives out way too much personal contact information.
Well, they can also hear me on the Observation Lounge, where I do not co-host with Greg Harbin.
Excellent. And that's also on Trek FM, trek.fm/TOL. And To the Journey, trek.fm/TTJ. We'll get you there.
You know, Chris, thinking back, I think the Borg might be the topic we've talked about on the most Ready Rooms between doing Regeneration and First Contact. And did we do iBorg? I feel like we've just talked about the Borg.
I think we did, maybe. I don't remember, but we do talk about them an awful lot.
And we've done some Borg Voyager talk. Always, we're finding new stuff to talk about. I was trying to think, well, now we're going to go over the same topics ever again. No, we really hit on some new stuff and talking about how the Borg evolved from this first appearance. So I really enjoyed talking about that with you and Drew and Charlene.
Yeah, I think we did. And I think that shows how well the Borg work as a villain, and how, despite them being a collective of drones where everyone's the same, they are rather multifaceted. Yeah. So yeah, we hit on a few new ideas here, which was good. And it was interesting to hear about your experience with the remastered version of this, which I will finally get to see by the end of the week, I hope.
Yeah. And I expect when we come around to TNG the next time, we probably will do that extended Measure of a Man. So that gives basically everybody listening to this, 5 weeks to go ahead and make sure you buy the TNG Season 2 set. Watch the extended Measure of a Man, which I'm telling you right now, it is worth the $60 or $7 or $119.99, whatever they're charging now. It's worth it just for that extended Measure of a Man. It's really high quality, and we're going to have a great discussion about it in a few weeks.
I'm looking forward to that for sure. Well, in the meantime, Greg, let's tell everyone where they can find us if they'd like to share their thoughts on today's show, on the Borg, on anything we talked about. Just go to trek.fm/contact. You'll find a form there. Choose to send a message to a show and choose the Ready Room, and that will come to both of us. And you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm, on Google Plus at hyperchannel/trekfmgplus, on app.net under username trekfm, and of course on Twitter at username trekfm, where Greg, myself, Char, and Landrew, today's entire cast, we are all tweeting from there pretty much all the time. So catch us over there. And then, Greg, what if people want to find you personally?
Yeah, if someone had that random thought to check out what I'm doing online, definitely find me on Twitter at Greg Harbin, G-R-E-G-H-A-R-B as in boy, I-N, where I'll be just talking about all sorts of stuff, especially how I'm now starting my Voyager rewatch, which it's been a couple years, so absolutely time. I did skip the pilot, so sorry for everybody looking forward to me seeing the pilot for like the 20th time. I'm done with Caretaker. I'm just skipping it. Maybe I'll watch it again sometime in the future. I started with Parallax, and it's like, oh, this show's kind of cool. There's like arguments between the Maquis crewmen and the Federation crewmen, but at the same time, it's kind of brightly lit, and it feels like the original series. This is kind of cool. So yeah, you can follow me looking at that stuff on there. Also, as Drew mentioned, please do check out my other podcast on Trek FM, which is called The Observation Lounge, where we have a weekly staff meeting and we talk about geek culture. We talk about just basically whatever we want to talk about, mostly what's going to be in the news that week. But really just anything we want to talk about that doesn't really fit in the Ready Room or any of the other Trek FM shows.
Right, non-Star Trek news.
Exactly, right.
About geek tech or movies or anything like that. Well, you can find me on Twitter as well. My username is C. Brian Jones, and that's Brian with a Y. And also, while we're mentioning shows and we're mentioning Voyager, by the time this Ready Room drops, the second episode of the new show that I do with Matthew Rushing, Literary Treks, will be out. And that show is devoted specifically to Star Trek books and comics, so the literary universe. But Voyager fans especially will enjoy this next show because we sit down with author Kirsten Beyer, who is the one author who is writing all the Voyager books now, you know, continuing the storyline of Voyager. And we sit down for about an hour and a half, actually, talking to her. And it's really fascinating carrying the story forward, why decisions have been made, and, you know, where things may be going. So check that out, trek.fm/LT for Literary Trek, or find us in iTunes and on Stitcher.
I thought it was weird how at the start of the Voyager novels, they get sent all the way back to the Delta Quadrant. It's like they just got back to Earth, and you're just sending them all the way back there.
Well, that was not Kirsten's writing, and we actually talk about that a little bit on the show. Yeah. So,
check it out.
And also, we want to remind everyone to visit the site in general. Go to trek.fm/PD for the podcast directory, and you can find what's going on with all of our 10 shows right now. And don't forget to visit our sponsor, Squarespace. Go to squarespace.com/trek and use offer code TREK12 to get 10% off of what will be, I promise you, your amazing blog or website using Squarespace 6. All right, Greg, well, let's let everyone just go about their business now. I'm going to wander off. I'm going to head back to the Observation Lounge and see if Guinan is still hanging around waiting for that next staff meeting to start.
All right, Chris, I think it's time to pull some Borg chips out of it because the Ready Room is done. There we go.
Waveform?
Coffee, black.
Audition is carving out my waveform like a roast.
Coming to a theater near you.
We're going to detonate this podcast.
And everything it stands for.
We are. I can tell already.
All right. Let's hop in.
Let's.